Welcome to the Shutdown Full Cast. Y'all, this is Rivalry Week Recap, and I want to start with something that happened, I don't know, after 7 OT. Because as the internet's only college football podcast, it's important to discuss what happened immediately after the games and not what's in the games. And let's be honest, after 7 OT, you don't really have a game. You just kind of have a collection of random events that unfolded in front of you that happened to turn out one way or the other, and somebody, in theory, has to come away with a win. That's not what we're here to talk about. No. There's a lot. I mean, you can laugh at Michigan. Y'all want to laugh at Michigan?
I'd love to.
Yeah. Well, that's going to have to wait.
I'm Spencer Hall.
And what I want to talk about tonight is I want to talk about the iron fist of Kevin Faulk. And
the other iron parts of Kevin Faulk. There are many.
Yeah, and the dude in a Texas A&M shirt who almost caught a hullabaloo connect right to the solar plexus and possibly the neck, the throat, at the hands of LSU director of player development and former LSU running back and former New England Patriot Kevin Faulk. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I want to talk about. Now, we have, I think, a consensus here. We were all up for that game, or did Ryan, had you already checked out by then?
Didn't even realize it was happening. Had totally checked out.
I fell asleep, ironically, during the sixth overtime.
Jason, you were watching LSU-Texas A&M to the end, correct?
But I have seen the aftermath. I caught up the next day.
Man, I watched the Hawaii game to the end. Of course I watched LSU A&M to the end.
You're an example to us all.
Yes, the only one. Kids, be like Jason.
No, stay don't. Up. It means not sleeping. Go no. to sleep, kids. Shut the fuck up. Go to sleep. Go to sleep.
It's maybe
one of
later.
One of the like four things you need to know how to say to be a good parent / uncle / aunt. Go to sleep. Be careful. Finish your food.
Yeah.
Actually, it's just three.
That's basically, I remember him as being so loving, and all you're doing is just giving basic human instructions. Don't poop there. Poop here, not there.
Be careful.
This is the one part of pet parenting that I think crosses over well into actual parenting. Along with, what is that in your mouth? Spit it out, spit it out, spit it out.
At the end of the game, after Texas A&M wins in the seventh OT, and LSU, for some reason, just forgets who plays what position and starts giving every carry to Joe Burrow. Not that it didn't work.
Shut down podcast mascot Joe Burrow.
That's right.
They also had a fullback play wide receiver and a running back play quarterback to throw to him.
Yeah. LSU just started to lose the plot. The game got so long that, like the tale of Genji, dead characters came back without any explanation. And no one really cared or asked too many questions about it, right? The continuity, all the timelines came together around the fifth OT.
Oh, man. Picture Coach O saying, rush him on.
There's many different perspectives.
I feel like it would sound like a sneeze.
Rush him on!
Excuse you, Coach.
No, I'm talking Japanese cinema.
Coach, what happened there with the field goal attempt as time was winding down that? Well, we had to rush him on, so had to hurry to kick up.
Truth is subjective.
What I wanted to get to was photos. The video came out later, but really, the first thing that came out of this, at the end of the game, there was a scuffle between some LSU personnel and some Texas A&M sideline credentialed people.
And I didn't pay attention to that at first because we'd already had one pretty funny game-ending brawl earlier that day in the form of UNC-NC State.
Yeah. Good tussle. Like, rivalry weekend had some good fracases happening, right?
It's like, oh, another fight. No.
We see you, Egg Bowl. We see you, everybody getting a warning.
Oh,
everybody getting a personal foul.
Did that happen?
Mm. Yeah.
Let's not forget Kentucky-Louisville.
Yeah, Kentucky-Louisville had a good dust-up, right?
I think on the opening kickoff. That's sort of a tradition there.
Florida State even had an attempted flag planting, which was...
How'd that go?
It was cut short by anti-colonialist Dan Mullen. We don't claim territory anymore. As a nation state, we exist as an idea.
Well, that's Ron Zook's field. Why would you ruin it?
That's true. He has to mow it now.
So you're saying Dan Mullen disrespected the flag?
That is correct.
Dan Mullen protested the flag?
That's right.
Flag disrespect in Mississippi?
Hey, Florida did have to take a knee at the end of that game, right?
Wow.
Wow. Topical.
So, all the way back around. This scuffle broke out. This was excellent reporting by Glenn Gilbo, who got to the bottom of this. A scuffle broke out, but before we knew any details, there was just a photo. And this photo is incredible because it was taken by Hillary Scheinick of The Advocate. It is a photo of Kevin Falk. Not an unfit man.
What's Kevin Falk up to?
Oh, well, Kevin Falk is about up to the dude's neck. He's got his, like, when you say catch these hands, he has delivered the hands to this young man, still unidentified, by the way. We do not have a positive ID on the guy who I will just call said redneck.
There are rumors, though, are there not?
We'll get to that.
We'll get to those.
Okay. All right. Sorry.
He does bear a slight resemblance to a member of the Texas A&M staff. Just saying. Not saying connected to anything. But the phrase, catch these hands. Oh, Kevin Falk hath thrown them around the collar and neck area of this extremely stunned dude, who instantly looks like, by the way, he's got his eyes closed. Somebody said he kind of looks like French Stewart. That is a real specific reference,
that's
but
a
it's
deep pull for 2018.
Yeah, it's not inaccurate, though. It's not inaccurate. If I just said kind of a countrified French Stewart, French onion dip Stewart.
French dressing Stewart.
French dressing.
French Stewart. French Creole Stewart.
Yeah. He is clearly on the defensive here, having made a very poor decision to start this fight. And his face registers every degree of this emotion, by the way.
Did we ever really explore why that dude was named French and no one ever bothered to interrogate that?
Hold on, I'm going to work on that right now. You keep going.
Yeah, thank you. Get to the bottom of that.
But his first name is Milton.
Oh,
that's why.
A lot.
His middle name. All right, hold on.
Who would do this to a baby?
Wait. According to Wikipedia, his first name is Milton. He has no middle name, and his last name is French Stewart with a hyphen. So basically, he's Cher or Prince, but French Stewart.
I have fewer questions than I did at the outset.
Damn.
I will say that.
That's amazing.
Aren't you glad you asked?
We've learned so many things already tonight, and we're about to learn a few more.
Do you know how much we bumped up French Stewart's Q rating in the past 18 hours?
This story starts, by the way, according to Gilbo's article. It starts when Texas A&M wide receivers coach Damian Craig, whose team won this game, by the way, right? Was, quote, yelling and going up to LSU coaches, including head coach Ed Ogeron. So, what do we
That's
learn?
That's the least surprising part, is because there's a reason Coach O would have been mad at this point.
Well, Coach O, if you missed it, Coach O was doused with celebratory Gatorade like an hour before at the end of regulation.
That's right. That's right. Okay. Before, I had to watch all seven overtimes.
Yeah, when I turned the game off in 6 OT, they were tied, so that's no problem, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Ed Ogeron, Damian Craig walking up and trying to talk trash to Ed Ogeron is clearly proof that there were law enforcement officials there, because I don't think anyone does that without a cop within arms, like, grabbing distance, right? Like, we got police here? Okay, cool. Hey, Ed! Kiss my ass. Officer! Hiding behind him.
But that's not what happened.
Nope. What happened was...
Wait. We need to frame this, because if... You know, we're not going to get into the salacious rumors circulating online as to the identity of this puncher, but suffice to say that if these are true, then this falls into this particular chain of country catastrophe, this particular vein of storytelling that I love, because it's one of those things where when you're framing the story at the very outset, you can start by saying, well, it turns out.
Which is how you know you've gotten the real redneck quotient up, is whenever you go, hey, so it turns out. And I'll just read this here straight from it. Damian Craig is over there raising hell, and Steve Cragthorpe, an assistant for LSU, decides to walk over and, you know, move it along. Just going to move it along, right? Saying, hey, so this is Cragthorpe directly. I went up to Damian and said, hey, Damian, get out of here. You won. You don't need to be doing that. Move along. And that's when I got hit. I mean, I got nailed. He was a young guy. I'm 53. I'm not going to fight him. And here's the it turns out part. Because if you're that young guy, the one who made a very bad decision in deciding to fight and coming up against Kevin Falk, who's from Cairn Crow, outside Lafayette, you don't want none. If you're that guy, this is when you get into redneck disaster territory, because it's never just about one detail. No, it's always about the additional thing, right? Like, hey, so when I went mudding, and it turns out it was a protected federal land reserve with a rare kind of turtle whose nest I disturbed with the wheels of my massive truck. And now those charges are federal. That's the it turns out, right? The, oh, I thought it'd be funny to throw my cigarette in the window of a passing car. Not only was he a cop, he was the president. President cop. I threw a cigarette and it landed on President Cop, and now I'm in super jail for the rest of my life.
Oh, Secret Service ain't shit.
It turns
out. Man, look at you weaving these tales of fiction so effortlessly.
So deftly.
You have a real it turns out story, don't you? Not for you, but
I do. The it turns out factor, like a coworker of mine who I've mentioned, or a coworker of my brother's from West Virginia, he has one of the best it turns out stories ever, because it starts bad. Remember, the story always starts bad, as in, well, I got a DUI because I drove through a building.
And that's the harbinger word here. The hey, what happened to you? Well,
yeah, that means there's two parts. There's gonna be a turn.
The turn comes with it turns out.
It turns out it was a post office in this guy's case, and those charges are federal.
The turn was also into a building.
Yes.
So.
Through a building. Completely through a building. That's what happened. And then he got federal charges. So about that turn, it's about to come up here in the story, okay? Because remember, Steve Cragthorpe talking. He says, I'm a young guy. He said, he's a young guy. I'm 53. I'm not going to fight him. Let's keep going. You might have remembered something about Steve Cragthorpe at this point, but if you haven't, I'm about to take you through it. I have Parkinson's, but even if I didn't, I haven't gotten in a fight since high school. So that's all real bad. Because this guy just punched Steve Cragthorpe, who has Parkinson's and is 53. It's not a good look. Are we done? No. We're not even close to done. Not even close to done. I continue from Gilbo's article. Out of nowhere, I got nailed, Cragthorpe said in a phone interview when he got back home Sunday afternoon. I didn't go down, but I clutched over. Where's that turn? Oh, put your signals on. There it comes. I was like, damn, he got me right in my pacemaker. Then it started fluttering like he jostled it. That's right. The turn wasn't just that you got into a fight on the field by punching a 53-year-old guy with Parkinson's. No, man, you hit him right in the pacemaker, the one you didn't know he had. And you popped him right in there. Boy, he felt it.
Also, since when is that a place to direct a punch?
Right in the face. I mean, unless you did it intentionally, which, that's scouting right there.
I think that means you got a heat-seeking fist. You detected the machinery.
Choose target.
God, Jimbo's ops division really is.
I'll be first on the line against Skynet. I can tell the robots. I can smell them.
Cyborg Steve Cragthorpe.
He was coming to kill us all!
I mean, really, he only kind of made Louisville sick for a couple of years, and then he was fine. He's not a very effective... He's a nice guy. He's not an effective Terminator. He'd be a terrible Terminator. Look, he's polite. He's got Parkinson's. This is not good. So yeah, popped him right in the pacemaker. And then, as if this wasn't bad enough... And remember, we're a good 4 degrees of trouble down in here. He turns and he sees Kevin Falk, who, if you've seen any of these photos, the most recent of which features Kevin Falk being held back by an LSU player and his fist in the exact shape of and the exact clench of the Arthur beam, right? Like he is about to bury this young man.
Swole Arthur.
Yeah, just Swole Arthur with the gym, by the way, with the gym shorts on under the khakis. Stay ready, all-star Kevin Falk. Ready to just go. He's like, I don't know if it's got multiple rounds. I'm ready to go. Take these khakis off and I'm good. That is why LSU and Texas A&M, best new rivalry in college football. Thanks to this god-level redneck idiot who ended up being, I don't know, three or four different memes by the end of Saturday night.
Renaissance painting in a couple of these.
It was. The framing is magnificent.
This is this year's college football Renaissance painting. Last year it was
Tennessee, Alabama.
Tennessee's Elmer Sean Cole. And this year it's this kid.
Yeah. So while we do not know the ID, I could say he definitely does look like the prominent Texas A&M staffer. He looks a little bit like, you know, maybe
they get it.
A relation.
They get it.
Maybe. Not a direct, but you know, close but enough.
Moving on.
Yeah.
So I don't like what we can't say that everyone's saying it's a Jimbo's nephew.
Many people are saying.
I don't know. Like
some
are we gonna get sued by Jimbo or something?
He's got the money, man.
like that is being widely reported.
Yeah, it's not like they have info horns, the information gathering.
Yeah, we're off their radar. Pretty sure
they're not rival.
This podcast getting shut down by Jimbo Fisher's legal team.
Full the best stuff
that
could have.
That would be our finest achievement yet.
And somehow Florida State would come rolling in. That counts as a win. We're bowl eligible now. Count it.
So the reason I think that is important to mention is what happens after the dust up when the young man nearly gets his head punched off by Kevin Falk. He immediately scampers off to find Jimbo to report what has happened.
And makes a punching gesture, right? Like, hey, hey,
hey, Jimbo, I just punched a guy with Parkinson's.
Uncle.
Uncle well, Jimbo.
Hello,
Jimbo's like,
Uncle.
You can't use my name out here.
That could be anyone.
He must be talking to you, Damien, not me.
I am many people's uncle in a spiritual sense.
Jimbo's like moment, by the way.
He's talking to Rick Perry, not me.
I thought I'd gotten away from these people. I thought I'd they've gotten all the money I needed and built myself a new life as a member of this aristocracy. All of a sudden, this white trash just rolls up.
You can leave the hills of West Virginia, but
can't take them nowhere.
Should have taken the UCLA job.
This shit does not happen at UCLA.
Oh, no, au contraire.
I mean, Diddy throws a kettlebell at you, but at least that's classy and off the field.
Right, that's way off the field.
Yeah.
You get a celebrity throwing kettlebells at you.
Not at the goddamn head coach.
That's just more like a rejected American Gladiators event.
I mean, I think hand in hand, the game matters a lot here. Tensions were high from, and it feels crazy to say that, like, the game was somehow topped by the event that happened after it, but it really was, at least on the internet, because this was quite possibly the craziest fucking football game in the history of football. We're talking the longest FBS game ever, the most points in an FBS game ever. It went over the total by 100 points, which has to be the biggest. If you took the under in this, you're officially the worst gambler of all time.
I'm so excited for somebody to be either doing like bowl previews or season previews next year and look at either one of these defenses and just look at average points scored on and we'll be like, well, you know, they really faded down the stretch there.
Yeah. If you use stupid math, then this game will make you sound like a dumbass.
Yeah.
You'll be out here saying like, oh, LSU, they have a below average defense. It's sad to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But they had the best quarterback in the conference. So.
Dude,
I wanted this game to go on so long. I wanted this game to go on so long that Joe Burrow put up 2,000 yards, and it's like, shit, I I guess we got to send him to New York now.
Gotta vote for him.
He threw for 5,000 yards this year. He's a finalist.
You'd be like,
can we give him the Maxwell Award just for one game?
Kellen Mond threw tons of touchdowns. He's got to have a ton of yardage. Yeah, 280 yards. They got to seven. he threw, like his line, don't look it up. I'm just going to quote it. Don't bother checking it. It's 23 TDs and 280 yards passing.
Because as the game went on, the refs were increasingly tired of this shit. Which the refs, you know, they helped the game go to overtime. Not to the degree that LSU fans thought at the time, because like the big bad call was actually a good call. The fourth down, the line was TV fucked up, not the refs, basically. But there was other stuff too. The refs helped the game go to overtime. But once it got there, boy, did they regret that decision. And it felt like with every period, the OT, you're supposed to start at the 25. It felt like it was just creeping closer and closer. Until finally on A&M's winning drive, it was like, the ball's near the end zone. Fine. Pass interference. Personal foul. Put it on the inch line. We got to get out of here. It's 1 a.m.
It did sort of feel like at the end where you really want a game of Monopoly to end and you just start giving your kids things, right? Like, oh, look, you got like 9 hotels on that. Whoops, I'm broke. It's crazy how you won that.
The Russians invested $10 billion in your $1 million property. You win.
You did it. Capitalism works.
I mean, this happened and it eclipsed even the Egg Bowl, which the Egg Bowl was lit. Egg Bowl was fantastic.
In terms of a fight?
Yeah.
But the Egg Bowl you knew would be that way. Yeah. And the game itself was not that good.
No, it was deplorable. It was awful. Despicable. Remember, although the Egg Bowl did have the notable achievement, not even Texas A&M LSU can claim this, not with their 7 OTs, not with all the records, not with the massive over. The over, right? Going 100 points over the over. It feels good to say that out loud, man. It's like, take it seriously. It's like hitting a line. You're like, whoo! That's astounding. But it did have an achievement that not even Texas LSU could, you know, offer, which was, how on earth do you get players ejected on a play that never happened? That was the greatest thing that they ended up with, I believe, 3 players ejected on a single play where the quarterback who dove into a fight did not get ejected. 3 other players did, and the play was then called back. So in other words, you were ejected for nothing. Never happened. Still ejected, though.
You're off the grid. You're off the grid now. The government can't tax you. Yeah. You're legally dead.
I wonder how that reads in the play-by-play. In like the sheets. Not like the ESPN play-by-play, but in the sheets they hand out in the press box.
So we're saying Ole Miss participated in football that didn't matter?
Ole Miss fighting ghosts? Interesting.
Ole Miss
four players ejected as their daddies watched on, as did all the ghosts. Sons. The ghosts who were also being ejected for fighting each other.
It makes me wonder if there's a corresponding voice to the Ole Miss fathers and sons voice.
Ghost fight.
No, that it's just completely opposite that, right? Hi, how you doing? We're Mississippi State. Like a voice with no gravitas whatsoever, right?
We just did that. It's Rice voice.
The boys fought real hard, but in the end, tarnation if they didn't get their butts kicked.
You just sound like Jimbo.
I just sound like Ross Perot. Yeah.
You sound like Jimbo. Put on like a 45. Like when you put one of those records, one of your child records on when you were a kid and slowed it down so Alvin and the Chipmunks sounded normal.
Oh God, I just sound like David Cross on Aqua Teen Hunger Force. Hi everybody.
It sounds like Jimbo if you're like,
commence the jiggling.
Coach, can you sound real fired up and excited for this recruiting video? I think that's what you get out of Jimbo at that point.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Texas A&M video. They're like
sorry, I'm glad to be here.
We gotta chop and screw him so he sounds normal. Hey! It's as slow and low as I get.
Jason, I have found the play-by-play description, and I'm going to send it to you so that you can read it as Wright Thompson, if you don't mind.
Oh, wow, okay.
Hold on.
This is all, but if you want to
know.
Whenever
you're ready.
If you want to know, by the way, that's my takeaway. It's the Texas A&M LSU fight. That's everything I want from college football. An otherwise kind of mediocre to mess season.
Men with Parkinson's getting punched in the pacemaker?
It's all you want out of a rivalry game. All
right. Please direct your complaints about this segment to @38Godfrey.
Yes.
I think he's... haven't we done enough? Let's not talk about Godfrey right now. Based on the results of this past weekend. Let's not talk about those. Okay, so real quick, this is all following a touchdown celebration for a touchdown that never happened.
Penalty. MS, unsportsmanlike conduct offsetting. Penalty MS, unsportsmanlike conduct offsetting. Penalty OM, unsportsmanlike conduct offsetting. Unsportsmanlike conduct penalties on all players on the field. Ejections. Number 2, number 3, and number 6 of MSU, and number 38 of Ole Miss.
Jason, we're just going to keep that rolling. What did you want to talk about out of rivalry week?
Well, speaking of Godfrey, we had a long bet on the Territorial Cup on Arizona ASU. He, of course, trusted in Herm Edwards. I failed to trust in Herm Edwards. And, it was looking great at points in the season, and then especially toward the end of the actual game between the two teams. But then Herm pulled it out at the end, and now it went 7-5, won the NFC West, going to the wild card round, I believe. So that's that. Godfrey and I are now 2-2 against each other.
You know what numbers Herm needs? Herm needs 7-5, because that's
somebody,
what he got.
Was it? I think it was Matt Hinton that pointed out they basically had the exact same season as the year prior. Like, they tore down a house, built a brand new house, and it was actually the same house.
But because we all assumed it was going to be a total fucking shit show, that's the secret. Hire a coach that the media is going to be like, what the fuck did you do? And then when that coach is not that bad, the media will also turn around and be like, man, look at them making it. Way to go.
Your coach doesn't have to poor mouth his opponents if the hire is the poor mouth.
See?
Damn.
Also, you're welcome, Arizona State, for everything we did for you.
There is no thank you note coming.
Nah.
Yeah. I believe, by the way, this features something which was the full Sumlin, which was being up by 35-21 or something thereabouts, and blowing it. Just full-on blowing it and setting up for the most obvious call in football, which is, with a college kicker, like a 49-yard field goal. Just got to, get it in the middle of the field. It's perfect. It'd be great. No, kick it off the hash. College kickers work a lot better that way. Yeah.
Do you know how many one-score games Arizona State played this year?
4.
9.
That's more than that. Okay.
9.
What was their record in those 9 games? I would be interested to see that.
Let's see.
It has to be okay.
Yeah, they were like 500 in them. They beat, Arizona, UCLA, USC, forgetting one, Michigan State. Those are the 4 wins. The close losses were to San Diego State, Washington, Colorado, Stanford, and Oregon. So 4-5.
So not that great, actually. We should just ignore that. Don't listen to that, Herm. Don't listen to that.
I'm more just impressed with the ability to play that many close games.
Did they just decide to have a year in which the disappointments were more marginal, right? Like, you know what this program needs? Less huge disappointment and more consistent small disappointments.
Like most teams you're gonna seesaw back and forth, right? You're not really gonna have, like, even Arizona, including this game, had, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. They had 6 one-score games, and they were all over the map as a team. And Herm is still out here basically lapping them with 9. That's whew. God.
It's going to be rough when he takes...
You know what that is? That's showmanship. That's 100% showmanship. Herm knows that you paid for this cable package or this seat in the stadium, and he's going to give you a show all the way to the end.
I would like to point out that, yeah, the general theme of the week was that bully stayed bullies. The teams that were supposed to win for the most part ended up winning, and that includes significant long streaks of just blinding, bitter disappointment by teams like, I don't know, Washington State, who in their best shot...
I can't, no.
If you want to know how doomed and how damned Washington State is as a program, it's our best shot to beat Washington in a while. Let's do it! Oh, thank you. Massive blizzard. Like, act of God. Nope.
Well, surely they adjusted and started, like, you know, running the ball and maybe punting for field position, that kind of
mesh.
Stuff.
Mesh.
Let's see.
Run more mesh.
35 throws to 24 runs is your total in the wintry slush.
Yeah, you know, they ran it a lot more than they usually do.
That's pretty balanced.
In that weather. This is their own weather.
Meanwhile, Jake Browning threw 14 times.
It's perfect.
And punted. He punted once.
How many of those runs were fumbles or sacks is the question.
I believe four.
Okay.
Three
All
or
right.
four. So not God. Too bad. But watching our special boy Gardner Minshew suffer so badly and throwing endless crossing routes as Washington just dared them to do something. Yeah, that was the most agonizing watch of the weekend. Even Michigan, you just thought, I don't know, man, you signed up for ass kicking class today and you're learning. You're learning all the steps of an ass kicking.
It didn't have the historical connotations with it, but the way West Virginia lost to Oklahoma was also pretty painful.
Jesus. So the end of Wazoo, Washington, the end of this game, and Tennessee's overtime loss to Kansas in basketball all happened within like 15 minutes of each other.
And I was going to say Tennessee was nowhere close to overtime with Vanderbilt, so.
Thank you. I didn't watch that game, and I don't actually know the final score. I'm fine with that. And that was the point at which I just went and laid face down in bed with both my arms at my sides very quietly for a long time. I'm glad this season is over. Don't tell me there's another week.
There's not. It's exactly. over. We did it.
Exactly.
It's still, though. Like, I know that these were all bitter disappointments that on paper made sense and to the eye were nothing but sadness, but... There's one game that...
Why are you like this?
There's one game that just sticks out like a sore ass thumb.
Is it Virginia Tech?
You know, Ryan, you and I are in sync tonight, and I like that. And the reason we're in sync is because we're both talking about agony, pain, and humiliation. Our shared frequency.
It's our love language.
Our love language is pain. And nothing was more painful than this game. Nothing! The last time that UVA beat Virginia Tech was 2003. It's the last time. And it's still the last time that UVA beat Virginia Tech because a 4-6 prior to this game Hokie team rolled in, managed to, you know, hang around, stay in the game, got up on them, and then suddenly... UVA attained a 31-24 lead. It was 28-24 for a while. They tacked one on. 31-24. And naturally, what do? Go with what was working? Keep passing the ball a little bit? No. They were going to run it. Because that's what teams are supposed to do in the fourth quarter. And surely Virginia Tech, who'd been capable of doing nothing consistently throughout this game, would not, I don't know, pull a long completion out of its ass and string together a couple of plays to tie the game up, convince everyone wearing any UVA apparel that they were damned from the start. No, that's exactly what happened. I mean,
it's not like all of Virginia Tech's defenders were gone and they entered the season with like five scholarship players. I don't understand what the problem is here.
I actually played cornerback for a couple series in this game.
Yeah, you looked great.
Thank you. No, that was good. You used like the boundary as the defender. That was awesome.
I don't know what those words mean, but thank you.
Very cool.
You're just trying to make plays, man. And you know what? With Ryan Nanny playing cornerback, Virginia still couldn't beat Virginia
they created
Tech.
A position for him, the nanny back.
Nanny back. Yeah, this
there's
was
a reason it rhymes with medevac.
This was just ghastly. It was so bad watching it happen because you could see it. You could see it like something falling off of the off the top of the fridge, right? Like, no, somebody immediately beneath it. Move.
You had Virginia getting up by what was it like 14-0 or 10-0 or something like that. The other way around. Then Virginia came.
They
back,
were Virginia Tech. Virginia Tech was up 14.
Yep, gave it up and
yeah. And then Virginia Tech went. And then Virginia Tech went. Yeah, yeah. It was a real bad.
Virginia had it.
Fuck up.
Yeah,
had it at least once or twice.
It was. Oh, it was.
You had this year. This week you had Washington State. All right, it's finally your chance. Finally, you're gonna beat the bullies. You're gonna be the big boy now. Virginia, it's your best shot to beat Virginia Tech in years. You're gonna do it. And I sort of feel like there was another team that was the case for, Michigan. I think that would apply. I think that would apply for Michigan.
Michigan, man.
I mean, West Virginia.
Hey, remember how we were talking about all the points scored in A&M LSU?
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State was very close to this point total, just with regulation.
Oh,
with zero overtimes.
Did Ohio State play a game this weekend?
No. They overcame great adversity and...
We're not here to talk about Ohio State. Fuck them. Michigan, you gave up 62 points. To who? I don't know.
Michigan responds as one. To whom?
To whom? You, after spending Friday night making fun of Oklahoma and West Virginia for giving up about that many points. Not that many, I don't think. Right?
It's like every league, not just the
yeah,
NFL,
not even that many.
The
you gave
the
up
Big
more.
12 was getting and was like, well, we can do that shit.
I know the
Michigan, your defense is worse than Oklahoma's.
I know the one I'm thinking of. Where the last time that this particular team won in this rivalry, Twitter wasn't around. Which comes into play in that team's response on Twitter to that team. Because Wisconsin, prior to the game...
God, this was a fun game.
...tweeted out, oh, you know, no one's ever tweeted that Minnesota beat Wisconsin because Twitter wasn't around the last time it happened. And after Minnesota came off the mat after a bad last month of the season, came flying up, revived, and put Wisconsin in the camel clutch. 37-15, and now holding Paul Bunyan's axe. Yeah, the University of Minnesota responded with tweet tweet, which is the most Midwestern nice stunt ever, right? Hoo-hoo. Hey there.
I think it gets even better. That tweet was like 2 years old.
Yeah,
I'm pretty sure they went back and dug up the receipts. Like, if you at any point in the last 14 years have said some shit about Minnesota, guess what?
Ooh, vengeance is ours. Yeah.
Oh, looky here, you know, just thinking about you.
Now I'm just thinking about our deleted scene.
Yeah, 37-15.
This was, there were a lot bigger games going on at the moment, and I was watching this one because I was cranky. This was a really fun game.
It is, I just want to commend everybody here. I think the most insulting thing we've done to Michigan ever in this podcast is immediately start talking about Wisconsin football.
7-5 Wisconsin football.
Hey, no 7-5 Wisconsin football.
Moving on to bigger and better things.
Can you look at the division standings and see where that puts Michigan? I'd be interested to.
Michigan rose all the way to second this year.
So a vast improvement for the plucky upstart Michigan football Wolverines.
Yeah, you got a 4 on the AP exam. Is it a 5? No.
Oh my, Ryan, I literally gasped when you said that.
That is the most Michigan insult ever.
You can't hear it on the mic, but my mouth actually fell open when you dared to say that. Oh God. A 4 in AP history, no less.
Oh. Can I tell you who failed an exam hard? It's a real bad segue, but I want to get to this score.
Is this a go ahead? Yeah.
Just this, that of all the games I didn't think were going to involve the kind of salt the earth, like Roman style beatdown, Wake Forest beat Duke 59-7.
Jesus.
Like, to the point where you're like, settle down, Wake Forest.
I do not know what happened in that.
I don't. No one does.
It was a nerd freakout. It was like the nerd freaked out on the other nerd.
You stop hitting yourself.
It was like the freakout in A Christmas Story, except it was two kids with glasses.
I've seen this scene before. It was when I was living in the dorms at the University of Florida. And one guy was like, so I'm just going to move these cannons here. And oh, you lost this game of Risk. And the other guy flipped the table.
Yeah.
Instantly. That's what it was for four quarters. Just big old nerdy Wake Forest. This might be the rare instance of a basketball grudge bleeding over into football.
That's the only explanation, or some kind of lacrosse kerfuffle.
Right. This is the last time you fuck with us in lacrosse, bro.
My favorite thing about this is Bill Connelly, every Sunday morning, he puts up sort of a review of how his picks, his S&P Plus picks did against what actually happened. And like, it's a way to show that like, oh, look at all the stuff that was really close. But then you can have fun looking at the ones that were not close. And he goes through different sections based on comparing the projected margin to the actual margin. And then it gets up to, you know, there's one section that's like games that were way off, you know, as many as four touchdowns off the mark. And then Wake gets its own section titled, Holy Crap! More than 60 points off the projected margin. Duke was projected to win by 8 by a computer that usually beats Vegas. And yet, Wake Forest won by 52. Bill calls it by far the biggest miss of the season.
This game is missing a really good branding opportunity between the Demon Deacon and the Blue Devil. This should be the game for Dominion over Hell itself. And, like, the winner should get some real gnarled, kind of bloody key. And they're like, yeah, this opens the gate to Hell. With this, we can unleash the underworld onto the surface and harvest souls.
Lucifer's key fob.
Yes!
Wake Forest does have those weird tunnels under the campus. So...
Lucifer, we told you have to get two-factor authentication.
Wait, it's about unleashing sinister minions onto the earth, and it involves Duke? That's wild.
Crazy.
I'm just saying, lean into the Hell angle, and this becomes a much more compelling game.
Yeah, that's good. I agree. I'm all for making every rivalry trophy as metal as possible.
Thank you.
I would also, speaking of battles for the soul that involve actual emotional stakes. Hey, BYU had a lead last night.
How'd that go?
Oh, no.
Well, you know, all things on this mortal plane are but transitory.
A lot of people had a lead last night. Kansas State had a lead last night.
Mm-hmm. How'd that go for
them? They don't have it this morning.
No. How about that BYU lead? That BYU lead? Evaporated.
Life's funny.
Gone.
The one 27-7 with 16 minutes to go.
16. Jesus.
BYU leads in like every statistical category. Utah, piece of scrap iron in his hand, is like, not today.
With Bronco gone, are they missing their signature cussedness?
They might need.
Virginia doesn't seem to have it either.
No.
I don't know, man.
Where'd that nut punchiness go?
It's on a UPS truck, just circling.
Yeah, y'all are forgetting. These are the new broods of the two coaches whose teams inaugurated the Miami Beach Bowl with a brawl between BYU and fucking Memphis. Next year's Commonwealth Cup is gonna be lit.
It's true. They're gonna be heinous. Remember in that brawl, by the way, person who got hit from the blind side, a Memphis player, not a BYU player. No, it was a Memphis player who was like, that's filthy. What are you doing?
The blind side, you say?
Yes. Oh, God. Yeah, that
now
didn't.
Really,
that
now
didn't,
you're really just being mean to Godfrey at this point.
That didn't work. I would also, that
I
didn't work.
I didn't mean to do that. Well, that was an accidental stray. Oh, God.
There, it also, like, at one point, I believe, before it slid the other way.
He come on the full cast.
I believe that Oklahoma State came back and made it a game, and then it wasn't. Because you can't predict anything that Oklahoma State's going to do this year. They lost to the team that lost to Kansas.
Good.
Yeah.
Can we talk about UConn just for a second?
God, yes. Oh damn.
just this is all I want to do.
What kind of
and
dream
listen.
Do you think Randy Edsel would describe this game as?
Trigger warning, please.
I want to preface that total yardage is a garbage statistic and it doesn't mean anything.
But it's fun.
That said,
boy, it's fun.
Maybe that's how we should describe it, not as a statistic, but as a unit of entertainment.
Yeah, that's fair. So we're talking about defense here. Oregon State, second worst defense in the nation in total yardage, allowed 6,441 yards this season. How many more yards did UConn, the worst team, allow?
600.
Beyond that, 6,441.
I'm gonna go.
What is the delta between these two schools?
600 yards. I'm gonna go seven. I'm gonna say they allowed 7,000 yards.
Okay. Jason.
I don't know what delta means.
You live in Atlanta.
Well, yeah. There's one delta I acknowledge.
Holly, do you want to hazard a guess?
I'm going to undercut Spencer and say, 8,500 yards.
Okay, you went way over, but that's okay.
That's fine. So did UConn's opponents.
7,409 yards. almost 32 yards away from a full 1,000 yards more than the second worst team. This team allows 8.81 yards per play, which means that every time you have first and 10 against UConn, you can get holding on that first and 10, and you still should be able to pick up the first down with room to spare.
All I'm hearing is outliers or innovators.
My That's God.
What, almost four
it's
miles.
4 point, it's 4.3 miles.
4.3 miles. Yeah. That's awesome.
Like, I kind of want to flip this on its head. How did anyone ever punt against UConn?
Actually, pull that up. I would like to see how much they did.
Okay, so how they allowed the fewest. They forced the fewest punts in the nation this year, both per game and overall. 2.3 for 28 total punts this year.
2.3 per game?
Yes, 2.3 punts. Per game.
Jesus, what?
Kick returners' hands at cobwebs.
There were, let's see, 1, 2, 3, 4 games where UConn only forced one punt.
So if you played UConn, you got to, for a day, pretend you're Oklahoma, basically.
Yeah. Oklahoma simulator.
Well, Oklahoma's offense.
Oklahoma actually did play UConn.
Yeah, that happened. That
Yeah.
It worked out happened. About the same.
Rules are funny. like these rigged automatic bowl games, sometimes we could use a little bit more flexibility. Example, Oklahoma UConn.
No, that was great. What are you talking about?
Yeah, it's very memorable.
You know UConn lost like $2 million on that game?
I did not know that.
Because, so they had to buy, that was the Fiesta.
Tickets out?
Right, that was the Fiesta Bowl, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So this is from talking to a colleague at work who has a UConn affiliation, and for that reason, he or she shall remain completely anonymous. They were really hoping to get the Orange Bowl. I forget who was in the Orange Bowl that year, but it was like another team that would have been, it would have made more sense for UConn to play. But they get Oklahoma, and they have to fly across the country. And because of all the tickets that they have to buy, the athletic department ends up losing, I think it's like $1.8 million in this by getting to
money
a BCS
that they
bowl.
Surely had lying around being UConn football.
100%. Not a dime.
Women, not a dime.
Now we're talking about women's basketball funding UConn football getting destroyed in front
Gino's
of nine
got
people
that
by Oklahoma.
Couch it's fine.
Can we pay it a nutmeg?
Get some facts.
Nice Connecticut pull.
Thank you.
So even if you use better numbers than just total yards, which are by themselves, they do tell the story quite well. Bill put up a post that was about using like good numbers to try and figure out how bad UConn's record-setting defense is. And it was, even by the smartest stuff, the I think one of the two worst since Division I split. And even if you include teams that were like were basically FCS teams mixed in with FBS teams, it's still right down there with the worst of those. Basically, UConn had an FCS defense at the FBS level. And respect to them, because they were paying Randy Etzel his $2,000, $3,000 little chip in bonuses throughout the season. Anyway, I think somebody tweeted, is it Steve Berkowitz who does like the he's just constantly got the contract details on deck ready to dish out. Like, this rich guy got this much richer today. I think this one was like at the end of another humiliating blowout to complete one of the worst seasons in football history. Randy Etzel got $2,000 today for winning third down percentage battle. Something like that.
Is Randy Etzel the greatest argument we have for paying players?
He has said that.
Yeah, that's the best part.
That's the thing he knows.
Oh my God! What if this whole UConn season is performance art?
What if this is Randy Etzel's
saying, "Look
resistance.
How shameful this is. Look how awful it is what I'm doing.
Look upon your sport and weep."
That Randy Etzel just takes that $2,000 and. I imagine that he gets
Ryan,
it like
Ryan,
in an envelope, right?
Ryan, put the sad husky on Ozymandias. Do it.
The sad husky on Joker setting a pile of money on fire.
Do it. You're doing that right after this podcast.
He's got the, with him in the nurse's uniform.
Yeah.
Hi.
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 I think that's the one where like he's walking away and he clicks the fuse and the bomb doesn't go off.
And then he just shakes it.
I wanted to talk.
He just took over hospital for no reason.
This is as good a segue as any to talk about super weapons that haven't gone off yet.
Charging.
Fully operational.
There's a rumble.
The prophecy is still alive. Because.
More alive than ever.
Because remember, what did we say about Pitt before the season? That they. We're going to be the ones that beat Clemson, correct?
They're going to bag a legendary pelt.
I don't know if we said that or not.
We said it.
We said they are going to wreck somebody's playoff season.
Texas is 9-3. That's all that matters.
We made two predictions. That was one. This is the other. Don't look up the rest.
Yeah. Michigan definitely wasn't going to beat Ohio State.
Yeah, we never said that. Never said that.
Actually, so
this would be a good week to go back to our week one episodes and listen to.
No, okay. It's never a good week to go back to any episode.
So after the false dawn.
No, because I actually do remember us cackling about how long Wisconsin had had Paul Bunyan's axe. I don't know what possessed us to be talking about Minnesota, Wisconsin in goddamn August.
That sounds like us.
So, yeah.
Good job, us.
Space madness, mostly. Mm. The Pitt streak after the false dawn of a close loss to Notre Dame. They beat Duke. They beat UVA. They beat Virginia Tech, and beat is a real gentle term there for what they did to Virginia Tech, who must be really good because they beat UVA. And a win over Wake Forest. Bully Wake Forest. They did exactly what we said they would do. The prophecy states that they would immediately collapse. Phone one in and embarrass themselves at Miami because they're spending this week and the next week charging up. Because the most Pitt thing of all would be to back in, beep, beep, in your Pittsburgh Steelers themed
garbage truck.
I was gonna say, you know, like PT Cruiser.
No. P-I-T-T.
I call it Big Ben because it's got a shitty turning radius and it's gray.
In Pittsburgh.
And it's slow and smelly.
Concrete jungle waiting to smell good.
Yeah. Dying. And the glove compartment's filled with fries.
Oh, that'd be
well,
that
just,
trick.
That's just,
no,
that's the
I
Pittsburgh DMV rule. Yeah.
Yeah, that'd be
that's just for safety.
Yeah. So hungry. I haven't eaten in 90 minutes.
Oh, I thought he meant as like crash insulation.
Oh, Susan, we're trapped in a snowbank.
Settle Break down. Open
stuck the, in,
settle
I'm down. Stuck in terrific.
Open the emergency fries.
Oh, that's
so. What we have now with the super weapon fully charged and operational, and it's drawing down on big pretty Clemson, big pretty peaceful Clemson, which as you know, as we have been envisioning for a full year now, if Pitt does this, Clemson really might be knocked out of the playoff. Like they're super dominant and everything, and like they have a nice ranking, but they ain't beat a whole lot of good teams. Ain't 'em's good. But like the strength of schedule numbers just are not very kind. And with Ohio State suddenly jumping up, Oklahoma hanging around, Notre Dame already in, Bama already in, probably. Clemson really could be knocked out of the playoff here. And the other funny part is if Pitt were to win this, Pitt would clinch a bid to the Peach or Fiesta Bowl.
Thank you, God.
Meaning we would have a repeat of UConn going to the Fiesta Bowl, basically.
No, except no, no. We'll go to that. We,
I
will
see Pitt fans in Arizona.
Listen, if Pitt,
man, if Pitt is in the Peach Bowl,
here.
If Pitt's in the Peach Bowl, we're doing something for it.
Oh, if Pitt's in going. The Peach Bowl, we're there.
Okay. Oh my God, the Peach Pit!
Yes, Peach Pit.
Hashtag Peach Pit. That's the rallying cry.
And if it's the Fiesta Bowl, it's the Sarlacc Pit. So
in Peach Pit 45.
What I would point this out too, that Kenny Pickett, the starting quarterback for Pitt, has only thrown over 200 yards once.
Also, if you make a tesseract out of his jersey, it says Pitt.
But he's only thrown over 200 yards once. That was 316 against Wake Forest, right?
I want to talk about my thing.
Okay. Now, I want to go back. Who was the last Pitt quarterback you remember?
Nathan Peterman.
Yeah. That's right!
Do you know why this is? John Boyce came up to me in the office like 2 weeks ago, and he asked me, like, was Nathan Peterman anything in college? Like, what? How the hell did we get to this point? And I was like, well, he was at Tennessee for a while and, like, was okay, nothing spectacular. Transferred to Pitt, again, okay, nothing spectacular. But he was part of this huge win over Clemson before, you know, all of the bilzing and more bilzing and so much bilzing.
Can I tell you the other very Pitt story behind this? Nathan Peterman, who, of course...
still charging. Nathan Peterman just takes longer to charge.
Which was this. That in the 43-42 upset where Nathan Peterman was a god. He came up to Narduzzi in the office beforehand. Probably, by the way, a 51-28 loss at Miami was the week before. The big upset of Clemson. Just saying, history repeats itself. Kenny Pickett, you're the new Nathan Peterman. Mm-hmm. Sorry, you have to hand.
Don't you put that devil on him?
No, he has to handle the. He has to hand over the Nathan Peterman mantle to somebody else in a year or two,
Jason,
or it's his forever.
Jason, for old time's sake, can we get a good Nathan Peterman as a god?
I don't know if I have that one in. Yeah.
That's fair.
So.
That would feel like blasphemy in a certain way.
We don't have to say what he's a god of.
So, okay, so that's true. The best part of this story is Narduzzi, Peterman was hurting, shoulder was messed up a little bit. Narduzzi, he said, "Coach, I don't know if I can finish the season. I'm going to have the season ending get ready for the next level surgery." And the coach calmly told his second year starter that there won't be a next level if he doesn't finish the year and finish it strong. This is all my way of saying that, one, Kenny Pickett's definitely going to throw for 900 yards against Clemson. Because if Jake Bentley can throw for 500, just saying, it's probably going to happen. Two, Pat Narduzzi hates Nathan Peterman. Because he made him do that, and that's why we all talk about the Peterman now. It's all Pat Narduzzi's fault.
Buffalo helped a lot. Let's not discount Buffalo's role in this.
Wouldn't have been there if it wasn't for the dues.
Man, imagine there's probably somebody out there who is a Pitt and Bills fan, and they were probably real excited for Nathan Peterman's first start in Buffalo. Like, oh, geez, Karen, I've seen this kid. He's got some special magic. You watch, he's like a magician. He's like Siegfried and Roy.
I'm glad we're doing voices again.
Is this a combo Pitt Buffalo accent?
Perterman.
Yeah.
We gotta get Kirshner on to just record a soundboard for us, like a pit, just a pit soundboard.
The Yinzer soundboard.
Sternbird.
Sir Marshmurner.
Do we care about any of this weekend's coaching changes?
Only one. I care about one non-change.
Clay Helton?
Nope, not that one. No? Not that one.
So Cliff is out, Fedora is out, Clay Helton is in, but we are here to talk about...
Per SB Nation exclusively, Mike Samford is out.
Yeah.
Mike Samford is also out. I was going for just Power 5 teams that our listeners have heard of, but there's also Western Kentucky.
God damn it. Godfrey, I'm trying to be nice to you. Look what happened.
I don't know if this qualifies as a Power 5 that our listeners have heard of, but Illinois not only kept Lovie Smith after they lost Northwestern and dropped to 4-8 on the year, They gave him a 2-year extension.
Have you seen that beard? It's the beard, man.
Let's keep this thing growing.
Look how authoritarian that beard is. Everybody loves a strong man.
You know, I bet
my,
this comes.
My working theory is that there's like one dish Lovie Smith can cook. That's like, maybe it's like, oh man. Have you had Lovie Smith's lasagna? Have you had Coach Smith's lasagna? Oh my God, it's the best. Like, you know, normally lasagna to me is just like lasagna, but Coach Smith's lasagna is fucking next level. Yeah, I know the team's terrible, but like, we gotta give him the extension so we can get more lasagna.
He's gonna keep going. Just let him go. Although, Coach.
I'm saying Illinois is run by Garfield.
That's the most. That's actually the best explanation for Illinois athletics in general, that it's run by Garfield. That when they get in for the staff meeting on Mondays, right, like, hey, let's turn this thing around. Let's make it happen. They open
Mondays.
Oh, I hate Mondays.
Illinois takes Mondays off.
Let's hire Ron Zook. He reminds me of Odie. I hate that guy. Fire him. But he got you to a Rose Bowl.
Just gonna eat a whole lasagna in the pan.
I would say this for Illinois too. I respect giving him the 2-year extension off that because it's the natural response. It's the hey, it's when you tell anybody, like it's the internet thing, right? When you go, hey, that's a stupid idea. Oh yeah? Well, I'm gonna like it twice as much now. That's it. I bet somebody, the AD, was like, shit, I'm going to keep Lovie. I'm just going to keep him, man. And they were like,
so what
why?
We're describing here is employing Lovie Smith to own the libs?
100%.
That's fine. All aboard.
Yeah, this is why Northwestern is going to give Pat Fitzgerald like a 23-year extension.
That was going to happen. I mean, he's not leaving, so...
So we need to report that we need to boost PFITs. We need to help him out, right? Because he'll never.
Yeah, that sounds like socialism.
Yeah, he'll never have a union to help him out, right? Mm. So we got to be. Oh boy, I've heard that. What's his name of program? Texas Tech. Super interested in Pat Fitzgerald.
Jesus.
Yeah, Northwestern is noted for their space and rocketry programs. Why wouldn't he want to live on the moon?
Did you know French Stewart was in Stargate?
Wait, what?